Hello, listeners. Welcome to Film Club. This is episode 26. Apologies in advance if you can hear lots of rain, but here in the height of summer in my end of England, it's decided to just rain for days on end. As they say in Westeros, a long summer is followed by an even longer winter, and it seems like winter is getting a bit of a head start at the minute over here. But nonetheless, weather and elements aside, we're here to talk about films. We've been away for a little while, and apologies for that, but we are back in your ear holes with more cinematic talk. I say we because I am Al Foster, joined, as always, is my co-pilot of this fine vessel, Mr. Daniel Seraph. How are you, sir?
Hello, I'm good, thank you. It's slightly less rainy in my part of England, so
I'm
probably feeling slightly better than you at the moment.
Yeah, it's good to know that, you know, the miserable weather isn't stretched all across this fine green country of ours.
Yeah.
We are here this week to talk about your last pick, which was City Lights, which I will pass over to you to kind of give a brief introduction to the film, why you picked it. And what have you. We should state before I just pass over to Dan, if you haven't seen the film yet, stop right now, because there will probably be spoilers, as there usually is. So if you don't want it spoiled for you, or in fact you actually want to know what we're going to be talking about for like the next half an hour, which would help, you should probably stop this at the moment, put it on pause, go watch the film, and then come back, so we don't spoil anything for you. So if you've done that, that's great. If you've seen it and you're ready to carry on, we shall continue. So Dan, City of Light, or City Lights even, rather, if I could get the film title right, would be a good start.
Yeah, there's a couple of reasons why I chose this. I mean, first of all, I'm quite a big Charlie Chaplin fan out of the films that I've seen. I think his films are great in the classic films, and I feel like, you know, they're very important entries in cinematic history for many reasons. So I wanted to choose it for that reason, but mostly I just kind of feel like, you know, we do a lot of discussing of, you know, filmmaking techniques and the way films tell stories and, you know, the way kind of film language is used. And I don't think you see better examples of that than you do in silent cinema, because it does rely on those techniques more than any other film, simply because, you know, most films, in fact, like 99.999% of films like today will have, you know, a script and they'll have dialogue, you know, that basically will do three quarters of the work for the film, which you don't have in City Lights. You know, this is a film that relies almost entirely on score and performance and its cinematography and its editing and all those kind of minor techniques of filmmaking that, you know, create a story. And yet I still think this is such a great film and tells such a great story and raises interesting ideas despite the fact that it has no dialogue. So I kind of feel like, you know, City Lights kind of represents cinema in its purest sense. You know, it is a film that's driven by filmmaking as opposed to, you know, any other kind of storytelling. You know, it's not so much literary or, you know, theatrical. It's a real film, you know. So that's one of the reasons why I chose it for Film Club.
I'm going to state this is the first Charlie Chaplin film I've seen. This is the second silent film I've seen. So I was actually really sort of excited to jump into this, because one of the reasons we started Film Club in the first place was not only to just talk about films that we love and kind of really enjoy from different aspects, but to kind of broaden our horizons as well and kind of get the chance and opportunity to see stuff that we haven't seen. And this is a perfect example of what Film Club is all about for me, because it is something that, not that I've been put off watching silent films or Charlie Chaplin films, but as you'll be able to testify, Dan, there's so many films come out a year, and to keep on top, you've kind of got to keep moving with the waves, as it were. And it can be a little bit difficult to kind of dip back and watch everything that you've missed in years gone by. And we're talking like a medium that has been around for such a long time, and to dip that far back, it can, you sometimes just don't have the time. And so this has given me the opportunity to make the time and go and do it. And for that, it's been a really great experience, because it's given me the opportunity to dive into something that has interested me, but I've just never got around to doing. And there's something I can really kind of see where your pull towards this film is. And the idea of silent cinema, because as you say, you think of the industry now and you think of the medium now, you have so much access. Well, I say you, I mean, like, filmmakers have so much access, whether that be in terms of technology, whether that terms be budget. If there is a problem you can't get around, it's easy solved. Whereas back then, much more restrictive. And you kind of appreciate it for that, because the whole production feels a lot tighter, and it feels a lot more interesting to see how they've got around having the more restrictive nature to it and not having the sort of access and reach that you would see in contemporary film now. It's kind of like what drew me to indie cinema initially, was the fact that people didn't have much to work with. It's basically just what you can utilise and get your hands on and how you can work around problems. And it feels more sort of pragmatic, and it feels more well-crafted in a sense, because you don't have the easy option out. You have to kind of think your way around problems, or you have to kind of try and work with what little you have. And the sort of minimalist approach to this is really interesting, and it's really fascinating. And it's just, there's a lot to it which really pulled me into the film.
Yeah, I think you put that beautifully. I mean, obviously we both see a lot of, you know, summer blockbuster, Hollywood, multi-million dollar movies. And, I mean, there are some great examples of that, and that's not to degrade Hollywood cinema whatsoever. But it is, you know, it is a case of where, you know, if you want to create something in Hollywood, with a studio budget, you basically will be given the tools to do whatever you want. You can create work from scratch. You can create monsters and human beings from scratch if you wanted to, as we've seen in the case of some films recently. And the great thing about City Lights is you don't really have that. And that's the great thing about silent cinema. That's the great thing about indie cinema, that you really have a lot of restrictions, as you said. That you have to work your way around, that you have to get past. And I think in doing that, you get to see a lot more of a character from the filmmaker, as opposed to, you know, it's just like, oh, we can try and do this, and you can just create it with CGI and special effects. You start to see more of a kind of personal touch from a filmmaker when, you know, they are kind of pushed into a corner with, you know, dozens of problems to overcome, and they have to kind of figure out like some kind of artistic and imaginative way to do what they want to do. And I think that's where Charlie Chaplin's like artistry comes through, because, you know, he has such kind of an ambitious I suppose idea with this. You know, it's partly a romance story, it's partly kind of this kind of social commentary. And, you know, he puts so much into the performance, and, you know, puts so much emotion and power, and it ends up making such a moving character with the tramp. And, you know, it's something that you won't see in a lot of other forms of cinema, because you can just create things from scratch. But I think, you know, the fact that, you know, Charlie Chaplin is faced with so many problems and so many restraints in silent cinema, it puts a lot of focus and a lot of weight on his performance, and he just delivers it really, really well.
It's really interesting you pull out the performance, because I think it is his performance which the whole film revolves around in so many ways, and it's incredibly well done. And the fact that there is no dialogue does put more pressure and more responsibility on his performance. And having not seen this, obviously I'm aware to a degree of Charlie Chaplin. I've seen obviously clips and bits and pieces, but I've never seen a full film of his. So seeing this, it actually helped me appreciate just how many sort of little intricacies he actually put into his performance, because without the use of dialogue, it's literally up to his whole face and his whole body to express how the character is feeling. And by doing that, you get like such a rich sense of emotion in different senses. You get like sadness, you get joy, but also one thing that really kind of stood out for me is just how fantastic of a physical comedian he is. Even from like the opening sequence when he's first revealed on like the monument, and he is so silly and it's so farcical and it's slapstick at its finest, but it's generally really funny when you see him just kind of contort his body trying to escape over the fence and rips his pants. And that might sound so silly to some people, but it is generally really funny to see just the way he is totally expressive with his body. And it's something that occurred to me is that there's a real sort of transition between that sort of style of performance and the performance that you would see in a theatre. Like, I am an ex-drama student, as it were, so it kind of just kind of clicked to me that there's a lot of stage production and a lot of theatrical sort of techniques and ideas moved from that to this, in all sorts of things within the film, not just his physical performance, but the way that they actually do get around certain problems. And a lot of the humour comes from like a theatrical background, like really small moments, like for example, sort of the gag where he's talking to the flower woman and the man gets in the taxi. Or there's the section where there's like a level of pavement which rises, because I'm trying to remember, because it's like a week since I've seen the film, so my memory's scatty. But there's a guy rises from like a cellar door from beneath, and he's like the same height as Chaplin until the level reaches its final resting point and you see him taller. Use of space and levels and sort of screen presence and awareness of where you're filming. And again, it kind of comes back to the idea that it's a lot more restrictive because you're having to use such a small area. And it's kind of like, well, what can we get out of this small sort of piece of scenic real estate, as it were? And to me, it feels like there's a lot of stuff from theatre and sort of amateur dramatics which has been pulled from that and put into it. And it works really well. And it's something you don't often see anymore because, like we said before, scope is much bigger now in films, and it kind of feels less intimate in that sense. So it was really the little movements and the intricate sort of gags and bits and pieces and use of space awareness really kind of worked for me in this film anyway.
Yeah, it does. I mean, one of the criticisms that I hear people say of silent cinema, and a lot of people, of course, are quite skeptical about going to it because it is such kind of old-fashioned medium. And it's kind of like, well, how do you tell a story with all these things? You know, how do you just tell a story with someone kind of performing and, you know, gurning to a camera? Like, what would be the appeal of that? And yet, because I mean, the film is essentially a series of sketches in a way. It's Charlie Chaplin going from one kind of gag to the next, but it is kind of it's really kind of held together by such a like an emotional story as well, which is what makes it work. And I think that's what fascinates me so much about City Lights. You know, Charlie Chaplin made the film like when sound was available, and he would have, I mean, having the power that he wielded in Hollywood, he would have been able to make a film with sound. But I know that he decided not to, and he decided to stick to his roots of doing silent cinema. I think it's just because, like, I mean, there are reasons why he's done that. You can find a quote somewhere, which I did write down. I'm going to try and find it because it's a really good quote, where he essentially says that action is kind of like it's. Oh, here we go. Action is like generally more generally understood than words. Like, if essentially, I guess what he means is that, you know, if you describe something and then you see it in real life, it's a different thing. Things that are told aren't exactly like the way that you visualize them, and so he's very much a champion of action, and you can kind of see why, because out of his actions and out of his gags and out of the way he performs and the way other people perform in the film, he does manage to generate like this great chemistry and this great likability and a great chemistry with those around him. And by doing that, you know, it's not just seeing someone kind of perform and contort themselves, and it's not just, you know, kind of this person kind of put themselves through a lot of physical slapstick gags. You know, you do come to care about his plight in the film and where he's going as a character in the film, and the people who he's interacting with, in particular, of course, the blind flower girl who he kind of has kind of a relationship with through the film. And that's what astounds me about City Lights. You know, the fact that it has no dialogue, and the fact that, you know, there it is so kind of slight in story and so simplistic, and yet you do care so much about the tramp and about the girl.
It's interesting to know that this was made when sound was available. I didn't actually know that prior
Yeah,
to.
well, it's sort of explains the opening gag in a way where
I
you
was going to
see those
say,
characters talking,
and
but it's
it's
kind
like,
of mockingly done
I
where
was
they all
going to
kind of talk
say,
in like kind of noises, and
yeah.
yeah.
I was going to say that makes a lot more sense than actually thinking about it now. I mean, it was funny at the time, but now it actually kind of has more sort of punch behind it because it's almost like a statement of sorts as well as a gag, and it works really well for that, I think. But also, you think about it, perhaps it ties into the fact that the flower girl is blind as well, and he's kind of working around that sort of sensory issue, as it were. Maybe that in itself is a statement on the fact that he's chosen to still remain in silent cinema when sound was available.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, one of the things that's interesting about his character as well, that he's, I mean, the tramp is essentially invisible, and maybe that's got something to do with the like political commentary that the film kind of has, which maybe we'll go into in a bit. But I mean, maybe it's also like a statement on, you know, the fact that, you know, this kind of action and this kind of character is, you know, at the time was sort of dying out of cinema, and it was around this time that we started to see like the decline of a lot of great silent artists who weren't able to kind of make that transition into talkies, because of course, like historically, like a lot of these silent actors, then as soon as voices came out the mouths, people related to them differently, and they weren't the same people that they adored, you know, because it's just like this completely different image of them. So maybe, you know, it's also got a commentary on that to it, which I've never thought about until now, but would be quite interesting if that was true.
The dancing in the rain syndrome. I forgot what I was going to say. Now, yeah, there is a real sort of political sense to it, and there is like a social commentary to it, which is great as well, because it is, like I say, it's fantastic. It's just an entertaining piece of film with the gags and what have you, and of course the sort of emotional arc and the sort of character development and the connections between him and the blind flower girl. But what's really quite interesting is that there is a political / socialist statement to it. And that's where the sort of rich drunkard comes in, basically. Who he comes in at a point which I found quite dark for a film of that era, because he's introduced to the tramp when he's trying to kill himself, and it's really quite interesting how the film takes dark moments like that and kind of spins them, whether or not it's into something that is quite funny, whether it's more of a profound statement, or whether it is like a sort of charming sort of relationship. It's interesting to see how it takes something that is rooted in something very dark and kind of manages to lift it out and take it elsewhere, which is something you don't often see anymore, because when people go dark in a lot of sort of contemporary cinema, they continue that dark streak, and sometimes it even gets even darker, which is always great, because, you know, if you've listened to the podcast, you know I do like my bleak cinema, but it's actually quite interesting to see him take something that is kind of spawned from a dark area and lift it into something sort of grander. And with the introduction of the sort of rich drunk guy, he kind of takes it into a statement on, well, at least from what I saw, at least in the film, a statement on sort of society and class difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because the rich guy is only ever the tramp's friend when he's drunk, and he has no idea what the hell's going on around him. Yet when he sobers up, he wants nothing to do with him. And it's got a little bit of a bite to it there, especially for that time period, I think.
Absolutely, I totally agree with you. And he also kind of, one of my favourite gags in the film is when the tramp goes to the millionaire's kind of party.
Mm-hmm.
And he just doesn't understand any of the kind of etiquette and any of the rules and, you know, how this kind of like rich society lives. And there's a great scene where he kind of gets confused between the spaghetti and one of the party ribbons, and ends up eating the party ribbons, and he just kind of bumbles through everything, and it's very funny. But I mean, this is the great thing about Charlie Chaplin for me. Like, when I was considering choosing one of his films, I thought maybe I'd do Modern Times, which was kind of quite more on the nose with its commentary. But, I mean, it's also there in City Lights, and it's something you can find in a lot of his films where, yeah, it is very funny what he does, and very light-hearted and very slapstick, but there is quite a satirical bite to it, in that he, in most of his films, is very critical of like the middle upper class, and is very critical of the rich. And as you said, like, you know, he's both of the main characters in this film, and both the characters that you come to adore, both poor, lowly workers who are struggling to get by in society, while, you know, the rich upper class kind of fawn about with the parties and don't even pay any attention or care or notice to him. And it's the same with the opening gag, you know, where he is sleeping on the statue because he's got nowhere to sleep, and and, you know, they throw things at him and they boo him off, and he kind of bungles his way down. And, you know, it is a very funny film, but there is quite a biting message, and sometimes quite a dark message to his films. It's also really interesting.
As much as I like the film, I have to say that it did begin to lose me a little bit with the boxing segment.
Oh, really? What? Yeah. That's one of my favourite scenes.
No, I don't know, it just kind of felt like it went on a little bit too long. I don't know, it just felt a little bit too disconnected from the rest of the film for me. That's my only real issue with it, and I think it kind of slows it down and it pulls it sort of off track a little bit, but yeah, I wasn't
there thinking. It does come to a point where you do have to kind of, because the film is essentially 90 minutes of slapstick gags, and it is hard to kind of adjust and sometimes it does wear on your patience, I will give you that. It does kind of get to a point where, like, okay, I've seen it before. and it does sort of recycle the same, at least kind of like sort of gags over and over again. But I think it's because of that performance and because he sells it with such conviction. It always works for me. Yeah, so I mean, I really like the boxing scene. Also, like in a character way as well. Like, it kind of shows like just how far he will go and how much he will put himself through for this girl, which is quite sweet in a way. And it all kind of builds to that to that very sweet ending.
it is, but he's trying to bribe people. He's trying to go 50-50 if they don't hurt him, which is quite funny. But it's also like, well, you know, if you're going to jump into boxing, you kind of should be expecting to get hurt. I don't know. There's bits of
there's so many throwaway gags in that scene, though, that just absolutely kill me. Like, it's when he's facing up to the really tough boxer, and he just knocks someone out on the way to the ring. It's just a repeated gag in that thing where he will just, like, knock anyone out with the slightest touch, his opponent. And I think that's fantastic. So I've seen it. It's one of my favourites, actually.
You might be winning me round slightly a little bit with thinking back on it. But yeah, that was the only bit of the film that I particularly didn't think worked for me. But the rest of it I really did enjoy. And it's kind of inspired me to check out more of his work, because I do like the fact that it is very performance-based. He is a fantastic performer. He's got a real great on-screen presence. But he also has a real sort of intelligent mind, not just in terms of comedy, but the way he sort of interweaves it and makes sort of statements funny and not just like real solid. This is the important bit, you should be paying attention. It's kind of like it's cloaked over with comedy, and it works. It's a great vessel. You know, anybody that can do political satire well is always going to kind of get sort of applause from me, because it's a hard thing to do, but he does it in such a sort of effortless way and an enjoyable way that it just fits in with ease.
Yeah, I think it's quite telling that, I mean, I've not seen a lot of Charlie Chaplin films. I've seen City Lights, I've seen Modern Times, and I've seen half of The Great Dictator. I didn't like that film because I think that was one of the films that he did. I'm not sure if there was any more, but that one definitely utilised sound quite a lot and had dialogue in which Charlie Chaplin spoke. And it sort of was like, well, he put a lot more focus and a lot more energy into the dialogue. They did a performance, and it sort of suffers in a way for that, I think. I mean, it's a lot of people consider it a classic, and I know that's not a popular opinion, but I like that's the thing that I love about him, because he is such a great presence. You know, he is this kind of this otherworldly character in the way that he moves, and he obviously puts so much thought and so much effort into like how he constructs a scene and how he moves, and the way it's set up and the way it's framed in order to capture this. And he is just such a great physical presence, and it's a demonstration of how, you know, you don't have to say anything, you don't have to have any dialogue to create a character who's unique and likable and you end up relating to. And that's all through Chaplin's performance, I believe.
It's funny, because watching this film made me realise just sort of how little the sort of physical performance plays in a lot of films now, and mainly as we've covered, because there are more resources and what have you. But it just kind of seems like, from a performance standpoint, that it's never going to be as important or as significant or as sort of impactful as it was then, because that was like a major key to making a film work. But it just kind of feels like a lot of films are moving away from the idea of physical performance. And the whole industry as well, because if you think back a couple of years ago, there was talk about Andy Serkis getting Best Performance Oscar nomination for his role in that Planet of the Apes film. And yet it never happened. And yet, strangely enough, there was kind of an outpouring of support for that from sort of film fans, yet the industry kind of shied away from it. So it's an interesting sort of commentary to look at that film in comparison to the state of performances and the sort of lack of physical performances in films now, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't know where to put the blame, but you certainly notice when you come to like Oscar season, a lot of the people who get recognised for the performances are the actors who will give these kind of big, rousing, inspirational like deliveries of their lines, and you know, will say the dialogue with such conviction, and that's great and that's fine. I mean, you look back at, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis and Lincoln who did it, and you know, you look back at, I mean, I'm trying to even think of some of the last Oscar winning actors now, even as far back as like Forrest Whitaker when he won his Oscar. You know, these are all actors who, you know, were memorable for the way that they delivered their lines and their accents and you know, how they captured their characters and the inflections. But I think physical performance is still, very important, and that's one of the reasons I was very much a champion of Andy Serkis getting a nomination, because the actual way that he captured that character as someone who's a human playing an ape,
I know.
it was quite remarkable. And you still see it a lot in performances such as, like, I mean, The Master was great for its for the way Joaquin Phoenix was very physical in it. And you still see a lot of it, but I think it's maybe, again, I wouldn't quite know where to put the blame, but it's definitely this kind of culture where, like, the great actors are allegedly the ones that, will be able to impersonate a real character, a real human as a character, and, who can give these, like, rousing inspirational monologues and things. And this kind of shows that, the greatest performances aren't always that. It can come from something so simple as the way that you walk and the way, that you move your head and the way that you kind of move your arms, anything like that. And City Lights is a good example of how important that is.
Exactly. We don't ask many questions on Film Club of you, the audience, but I would like to actually ask you listeners, what was the last modern physical performance that you thought was really great, thinking about it? Because you mentioned The Master. I haven't actually seen The Master yet. I'll say that quietly because that might get me stoned in some communities with, I know, terrible. But it'd be interesting to get some feedback on what was the last great sort of physical performance in a sort of modern film that listeners had seen.
Do you have any opinion on that yourself?
At the minute, no, my brain doesn't work that quick, unfortunately. And
Oh,
it
we
would.
did talk about this a little bit. I can't remember, it wasn't the last phone call we did. It was maybe a few weeks ago when we did Pan's Labyrinth, and we were talking about, is it Doug Jones?
Yes,
Who does a lot of physical performance, and he's great at doing that.
That's right, he plays the Fawn Man, doesn't he? And he plays a lot of the mythical characters and stuff. Yeah, he's got a really good sort of physical presence and performance in that film. Because you kind of really do get suckered into the fact that it's an otherworldly creature that you're watching and not just somebody in makeup and costume. It's strange because it seems like a lot of that practical filmmaking's going by the wayside, which is a shame because it's something that's always interested me and something I've always loved is sort of practical filmmaking. Don't get me wrong, technology's great and CGI and digital animation can produce some wonderfully looking things and it can help a film really kind of raise itself to another level. But I don't know, there's just maybe an old sense of romanticism that I sort of have for sort of practical filmmaking.
Me too.
Anyway, there you go. So if you can think of some great modern physical performances, do let us know at screeninvasion.com and just look for this podcast episode 26 and let us know in the show notes, along with your picks for your next public pick, which will be next week. So if you have a film that you want us to check out, you want us to go over, let us know what it is. Put in your suggestions at screeninvasion.com or at twitter.com/invasionradio or twitter.com/screeninvasion. Simple as. Let us know what films you want us to cover next week. But this week, it's back to me. It's my pick. And I have picked something that I have seen once. And thoroughly, really, really loved. In fact, I think it made my favourite list for the film, for my list of favourites for the year that it was released. The man that's made it has only ever made one film, and this is it.
Has
He
only made one film.
only made one film, and this is his only film that he's ever made. Stemming from the world of fashion, having a Jay-Z song named after him recently, it comes from Tom Ford, and it is A Single Man.
Oh,
And
very
the
nice.
reason I picked this film is because it's interesting to see people that jump into film from different mediums and different sort of worlds. And there is very much a sense that you can see where he's come from. He has a lot of. It's strange because we were talking about directors having more of a personal touch to films back then and kind of having traits. One thing that I've always loved about watching films. And watching films from particular directors is trying to spot little characteristics, little things that they have, little sort of tweaks, little things that are sort of recognisable, sort of signatures, and what have you. And you can sense that there is a lot of sort of signatures from his previous world and his current world, because I still believe he's in the world of fashion, translated from that world into film. There's a lot of interesting color choices, camera angles, close-ups. There's a lot of technical little bits and pieces and intricacies from what I remember from A Single Man. And from a filmmaking standpoint, I kind of wanted to re-examine that film and kind of see if it still holds up. And also, it's got some fantastic performances from Colin Firth and, of course, Julianne Moore. And yeah, there's many, many reasons why I wanted to watch this film, but those are just a few of them. So there you go, A
That's a
Single
great
Man.
choice. I'm a big fan of that film. And it kind of ties into what we were just saying before as well, so that was a nice transition.
And it's a shame that he's only done one film as well. Again, I need to see it again to see if it still holds up, but it would be interesting to see him do another film at some point.
Yeah.
But there you go, that is your pick from 2009, A Single Man by Tom Ford. I'll put a link to the trailer if you're unfamiliar with the film, and of course a link to the IMDb page. Just make sure you avoid all the message board comments and when you go on
As always, that
IMDb.
goes without saying.
Exactly. So you can check out the film if you are unfamiliar with it. If you've seen it before, this is your opportunity to watch it again and comment on it as well. If you want to comment on City Lights or any of the other 24 films, hard to believe that we've done 25 already.
Wow.
Where has the time gone? You can jump on board at screeninvasion.com, or you can go to Facebook and look for Screen Invasion on there, and from the Screen Invasion page on Facebook, you'll be able to find the Film Club forum. Of course, you can get in touch with us, as previously mentioned, at twitter.com/screeninvasion or Invasion Radio. Or if you want to get in touch with us in particular, you can find me at twitter.com/IamMalkovich. Dan, if you want to give your Twitter address out, Dan.
It's twitter.com/DanielSarah.
There you go. So if you want to get in touch with us that way, you can do as well. But there you go. Till 2 weeks' time, Single Man, go watch the film. Watch it, let us know what you think, and then join us back next time for episode 27. And of course, get your suggestions in because it's your guys' turn next. And, you kind of have to redeem yourself after Funny Games. I'm just saying.
That's true, very true.
Yeah, so there you go. See you in 2 weeks' time. Go watch the film, enjoy, and have a think on what we should watch next.